Good morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. In just a couple of minutes, Rabbi David Saperstein is going to be with us, and later in the program, Robert Knott will also be joining us. But first, I would like to welcome Linda Siegel with today's legislative update. Things are actually moving in the legislature.
Yes, they are, Mary Charlotte. Well, they're moving, but moving slowly. Of course, there's been almost 3,000 bills, memorials, constitutional amendments introduced, but they're starting to move in both chambers. Only six bills have actually been signed by the governor, gotten up to the governor's office out of these 3,000. So it's really speeding up now, and you heard that cockfighting passed, the ban on cockfighting passed, and the stem cell research bill passed, and the marijuana bill failed.
That's right. So medical marijuana will still be denied to cancer patients and other people who feel they need it.
Yes.
What if, I wanted to ask you something, Linda. If a terminal cancer patient decided on their own to find non-medical marijuana and smoke it, would the cops put them in jail?
I don't think it's very likely. I mean, you don't want to have to take care of somebody because the state or the county or whoever would put them in jail would have to pay for all their health care. So, but it is a sad thing, and politics, of course, were involved in its demise.
Politics, how shocking. Stem cell research, that's something that we have not heard much about during this session.
Yes, the governor's really pushing that, and the bill that passed was one that would enable research at UNM, and there's also the governor's requesting $2 million in operating money to get that program going at UNM, and over $4 million in capital outlay to build the facilities that would do this stem cell research. So that bill has passed the Senate and will be going over to the House.
What else is on the top of the agenda? Any important bills to be voted on? Oh, the bill to impeach the President Bush and Vice President Cheney, that failed too.
Yes, that was killed in the Senate yesterday. What did pass the Senate yesterday is the D. Johnson Clean Indoor Air Act, which is a bill that would prohibit smoking in restaurants, bars, and most places of employment. Now, that bill had already passed the House, and yesterday passed the Senate. There was a little tweaking of the language, so the House has it on their calendar today to concur with the Senate amendments. And if they do, that bill will be going up to the governor's office.
And so smoking at that point will only be allowed at home or in your car, as far as I can tell.
Pretty much. There's a couple of exceptions for cigar bars, but mostly smoking will be in any place where employees are. Smoking will be banned, and it's really a big health issue.
What else is the legislature set to vote on today and in the next few days?
Well, there are quite a few bills on the agenda. I'm not sure how many high-profile ones. One that did, a high-profile bill that died last night in Senate Public Affairs, was the Mandated Community Treatment Act, and that was that Kendra's Law-type bill that we've been hearing a lot about that would have required forced treatment of mentally ill people, and then people were very divided on that. Some people strongly supporting it because of the thing that happened in Albuquerque, and the mental health advocates, many of them opposing it because of the civil rights restrictions and because that you can mandate treatment, but if you don't have any money to pay for it, and we are lacking in those kinds of programs and funds, that it doesn't do much good. So that one is dead now.
And any hope for universal health care?
No, that's pretty much dead. Both of the Health Security Act bills, which are the similar to like single payer, those have both just been held up in committees in both chambers. And we're going to have to wait for that health care report, which is supposed to come out in June, which will have analyzed financially three different health programs, including the Health Security Act.
Anything else you want to let us know about before we go?
I think that's it for today.
Linda Siegel, thanks so much.
See you Monday.
Linda Siegel is with us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with the legislative update until the very end of the session. We're going to take a small break right now. Stay tuned to KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Salsas y Sol, Mexican restaurant and cantina. Presenting this Friday, Grupo La Guira from El Paso, starting at 9 o'clock. Located at 2400 Cerrillos Road, Salsas y Sol is a new place in Santa Fe for dancing and dining. That's salsa dancing with Grupo La Guira playing live this Friday night starting at 9 at Salsas y Sol. More information at 474-6406. You're cordially invited to join with community groups and agencies that care for the Rio Grande in a celebration of New Mexico's Great River Lifeline. The third biennial Rio Grande Day celebration will be held this Saturday, March 10th, from 10:30 to 3:30 in the Capitol Rotunda. Special events include exhibits of river restoration projects, live music, and the Gathering of Water ceremony on the Capitol steps. For more information, call 751-1269. Sponsored by Rio Grande Restoration, a tax-exempt organization.
I'm delighted now to welcome Rabbi David Saperstein. He's both a rabbi and an attorney. He's director and counsel of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism in Washington, D.C., and he is the co-author of the book Jewish Dimensions of Social Justice, Tough Moral Choices of Our Time, and is in Santa Fe this weekend in a series of events that we'll be talking about. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Delighted to be with you.
It's great to have you here. Now, your book is full of moral and ethical problems facing the world we live in, from medical, environmental, social, political issues. Jews and Gentiles are equally concerned with these issues. What is the Jewish angle? How are these issues made easier to deal with? Is it by the study of Old Testament, of Jewish scripture?
As with most of the religious groups in the United States, Mary Charlotte, we have a process that involves looking in our sacred texts that would include the Hebrew Scriptures, the Christian Old Testament, the rabbinic interpretations of those in the Talmud and the commentaries over the generations, the legal system of Judaism that try to apply the values of the Bible to the very real issues of poverty and health care and environmental protection going back thousands of years, and consistently did so to draw ethical insights that can be helpful in the free marketplace of ideas in America, and that's a process that goes on.
Now, as you point out in the book, there are some places where we live in a modern world where scripture hasn't even begun to touch questions, for example, of complex technology and life-saving devices and things like that didn't exist even 100 years ago, much less several thousand.
Take the issue you were talking about with Linda Siegel, which is so interesting, of stem cell research.
For example.
The rabbis, the ancient Christian scholars never could have envisioned something like that. But they did set out a number of criteria that should be used to judge these kinds of application of scientific technology to the world. That the purpose is to make the world better. The purpose is to heal. We all have mandates in our tradition about using our God-given wisdom to heal. In the Jewish tradition, we have a particular stance that deals with the question of when life begins differently than some of the Christian strands, even in the most theologically traditional strands of Judaism. We have no idea that life begins at conception. Human life begins at conception. So there's universal support of, even in the most ultra-Orthodox circles, for stem cell research as a way to try to cure terrible diseases that afflict humankind and make their lives better. And we believe that's what God charges us to do.
What is the Jewish theological position on when life begins, and what text does that come from?
There is a variety of... the only place in the Bible that, in either of these scriptures, that you have a specific reference to something directly on point is in Exodus, where it talks about two men striving, and if they injure a pregnant woman and she loses the fetus, that the penalty will not be a criminal penalty or death. It will be a monetary penalty, from which the rabbis in the Talmud, the time that Jesus lived, the writing down of an oral tradition and the interpretation and application of biblical laws to their world at that time, and through all the legal codes of the last 2,000 years, have continued to expand this idea in a consistent way that says human life does not begin at the moment of conception. There are different theories of when it begun, some are quickening 40 days, some viability. But to the very end, the realized life of the mother takes precedence. If in order to save the life of a mother, a fetus endangers that, and the only way to save the mother's life is for the fetus to be destroyed, it's actually a religious mandate to do that in the Jewish tradition. So even in, as I said, in the most strict Orthodox circles, it would be looked at very differently than the Catholic view would be looked at.
Now, there are some other examples in the book. I was interested to read the section on racism, and you talk about, I mean, every tradition says racism is a bad thing, but you give real-life modern examples of, for example, people fleeing to the suburbs from the inner city, and what are the ethical dimensions of that? I found that very interesting.
The book is actually structured that way. It interweaves... A look at what the texts tell us about contemporary challenges we face, and then throughout the book, real life decisions that had to be made by the religious communities of America, or in our case, by the National Reform Jewish Community and the 900 congregations with 1.5 million members who had to make decisions. We're doing this right now on the war in Iraq, having a debate with our board this Monday. We're the first Jewish group to take a position in opposition to the war in Iraq, and the question is, should we expand the position that we've taken? So we're always involved in doing this, and the book actually gives a lot of real examples. So, yes, we do talk about the white flight issue in the book, and there are moral obligations that even if people move away from the urban centers, that the destiny, the well-being, the strength of the educational, economic, and social systems of our urban centers are going to determine the whole future of this country. And you cannot, like Noah in the Ark, just turn your back, on what else is happening here. We have to confront what is happening in the world, no matter where we live. So, yes, you may move away. You may put your kid up for full-time Jewish education in a private school. But if you do, how much more so you have an obligation to engage with the public school systems of America, with the problems of the inner city, and to ensure that America works for all people. For, I think, one thing much of the Jewish community knows intuitively, having been one of them with African Americans, the quintessential victims of group hatred and deprivation and discrimination in Western history, is that if we live in any society that we live, if any group can be subject to persecution, discrimination, oppression, no group is safe, including the Jewish community. And it is not only in our moral interest, but our self-interest to ensure that justice and equality prevails in America.
Now, pretty much everybody I know, and without exception, everybody I know who grew up in a Reform Jewish context is very interested in social justice. It's part of the deal. What about Orthodox Judaism?
There are three strands that led to the particular emphasis Reform Judaism has. The core one of those three, all Jewish streams, including Orthodox Judaism, shares. One is God's mandate, that we be partners with God in shaping a better and more hopeful future for all God's children. It comes from the Bible's call for us to be a holy people and for Jews to be a light to the nations. How can we be a light to the nations if we turn our backs on the fundamental issues of peace in the world and economic justice here at home? So that sense of God, and in Leviticus, when it asks us, when God calls us to be a holy people, it tells us how to do that by setting aside a corner of the field for the poor and removing the stumbling block before the blind and setting up courts of justice and paying the labor a fair and timely wage. So it's absolutely clear that a God-given call is that. Now, Reform Judaism, building on that, really evolved in the 1900s in the middle of the Age of Reason. And Age of Reason philosophers emphasized that which was most logical and rational about religion was ethics. So it took ethics to even a higher standpoint. And for Reform Jews, this was a key organizing principle of our Jewish identity, the sense of having a prophetic mission that so many other Christian groups share. The social gospel tradition in the Christian community was influenced by exactly the same factors that drove Reform Judaism's emphasis on this. So our passion for social justice is central, and we share it with a lot of the Christian community and other communities as well.
And atheist communities and Buddhist communities and basically anybody who's interested in a compassionate stand toward one another.
Indeed, but the source of it for all those different groups comes from their distinct experience. For Jews, what we learn around the Seder table when we retell the story of freedom, what we learn lighting the Hanukkah menorah and learn about religious liberty in the Maccabees' heroic battle against the Greek oppression over 2,000 years ago, what we learn every Sabbath and talking about what a world of peace means. This is the way that we help convey that generation to generation. Every group has its distinct way of doing it, but it doesn't make one group's ideas better than anyone else's. All we can do is draw from the richness of our tradition and put it out in the free marketplace of ideas. This was, for example, the genius of the Catholic bishops' pastoral letters on nuclear disarmament and on global warming and economic justice. They drew from distinct Catholic doctrine to say, here are the ethical norms, and in our natural law source of authority in Catholicism that's accessible to anyone, even if they don't accept Catholic dogma, here's how we think these should be applied. Not suggesting Catholic law is binding upon America, but rather a moral goad to the conscience of the country with great ethical insight. And all religious traditions do that, and that's what we're part of undertaking in America today.
We're talking to Rabbi David Saperstein, and he's co-author of the book Jewish Dimensions of Social Justice, Tough Moral Choices of Our Time. And at the end of the program, we will give a list of all the events that are happening today, tonight, and tomorrow. I have to say, reading the book, one gets the sense that there's a lot of committees and arguments and conversations and negotiation and stuff that went into coming up with the responses and positions that are in the book. What was the process like?
It's because of whom I work for. I work for a national religious denomination. So we have structures, just like the Presbyterians and the Methodists and the Islamic Society of North America and the national Sikh groups. All groups, those who organize in national faith group entities, they have structures. So yes, a lot of the book talks about the action, because I try to exemplify real decisions that we had to make and try to honestly assess where we succeeded and where we failed. These were tough battles within the conventions and the board meetings of our national denomination.
What are some of the kind of arguments that you had? I mean,
we took a position against the Vietnam War several years before any of other national Jewish organizations did. By the end of the war, all of them had come out with a position against the war. But it led to some of our largest congregations leaving the movement for a while, for a few years, and then they came back and rejoined over that during the debates over civil rights, where many of our rabbis were down working and organizing in the South and were marching with Dr. King. Many of our congregations in the South were deeply resentful and almost led to splits for us.
But what about more recently? In other words, some of the ideas and ethical, moral decisions that went into this book.
Right now, when we were preparing for the vote that's going to happen Monday on the war in Iraq and whether we're going to oppose the surge and call for a specific timetable by which time American troops should withdraw, 14 months ago, as I said, we became the first national Jewish organization, and still the only, to take a position on the war one way or the other, but in our case, to come out against the war. We're now trying to address what's happened in the last 14 months. A month ago, we put this out across the country, the copy of the resolution, asking all of our congregations to have open forums, discussions, give us feedback. Hundreds and hundreds of people, rabbis, presidents, board members of our congregations, average members of our congregations, have written us with their ideas of what this resolution ought to do and what this resolution ought to say. Some are outraged that we are doing this, in the same that people are outraged we took a position on civil rights in the Vietnam War, saying it's not religious. We say that if you look at what the prophets say and the entirety of the biblical tradition and the idea of ethical monotheism, it is profoundly and deeply not only religious, but at the center of our religion and what God calls us to do. Others took issue with specific things. Some wanted us to go further, calling for a cutting off of funding right now to the war. So our entire country, all across America, our synagogues have been involved for the last month in this fascinating debate and rich debate that will animate the decisions that we're going to make. We're going to make on Monday.
Now, what about peace as a value in itself, would you say that Judaism is an inherently pacifist religion?
Judaism does not have the same strand of pacifism that the modalities of turn the other cheek from the New Testament led to in Christian life. There's a much stronger strand of pacifism in Christianity than there is in Judaism. It was never the majority in Christianity, but it's a strong minority strand in Christian thought. And in Judaism, the idea of a moral use of force, similar to Christian just war theory, that Augustine and Aquinas developed in Catholic doctrine. We developed, going back to the Bible, there are rules about the rules of law, and 2,000 years ago in the Talmud, these got developed into very specific rules about what's allowed and what's not allowed, what's a just cause to fight a war and what isn't, what's the right authority to fight a war and what is not. And we believe, particularly based on the Bible's mandate, that if you see someone pursuing another person to harm them, you are obligated, so long as you don't risk injury or your own life, to intervene even physically, to stop an innocent person from being hurt. Based on that, we always believed that there is a moral use of force. On the other hand, the term shalom, its root l'shalem in Hebrew, does not mean what pax means in Latin, the absence of strife or war. It means to make whole, to heal, to make complete. And we understood at the same time that there was a moral use of force. Its goal was to bring peace that would be the peace of wholeness, of healing to communities. The rabbis told us 2,000 years ago, the sword enters the world because of justice delayed and justice denied. So we see this all being integrated, that peace is the goal. It requires justice, equality, fairness, compassion. But sometimes along the way, when you face people who intend to do evil, you have to respond with force to protect innocent people.
It's funny because that type of doctrine comes from examples that have to do with saving one individual human from another individual human. When you start getting to the scale of governments and armies, the whole game changes. And people, when they have a big army, when they want things, they can interpret scripture. They can use scripture for their own ends.
People, just like lawyers, can use the same law to argue for both sides of a case. People use scripture to argue for both sides of a case. There's nothing implicitly wrong in that. In the Talmud, we recorded majority and minority opinions, kind of this first structured free marketplace of ideas, because the rabbi said what was a minority opinion at one point, a generation later they may see the wisdom of and believe that it ought to be the majority opinion. So it was important to record diversity of viewpoints and ensure freedom of speech. So yes, people will use scripture differently. It's true on an individual basis as well as on a group basis. But in the end, the majority of the sages made a decision about how to apply the law that became the rule, the law for the Jewish communities. In the end, we had to use our wisdom to make the best decision possible. It's true in politics today. It's true as we apply the religious tradition to the world. I'm sure on the bishop's committee on the pastoral letters, there were minority viewpoints that differed with what the final decision. But in the end, we make decisions. We don't try to pretend. We speak for all our members, all our rabbis, all our priests, all our ministers, all our board members, all our presidents of churches and synagogues. But we do speak for the consensus of the decision-making processes of our movement, fulfilling our mandate to be a prophetic witness and a moral go to the conscience of the country. And I think the country is much richer for that.
Now, what is, in other words, when you live in a country that has, like ours, a separation or supposed separation of church and state, and then a religious organization takes a position, what does that actually do?
What the founders were concerned about, this is part of the field that I teach as a lawyer for 27 years. I've been on the faculty of Georgetown Law School, where I teach church-state law. So it's into your question goes to an issue that's a passion of mine, and I've written on extensively. What the founders really were concerned about was creating a wall that was primarily a one-way wall on a functional level. It prevented government from interfering with religion, but it did almost nothing to prevent religion from having all the same rights of freedom of speech, freedom of publication, freedom of association, freedom to petition the government for redress of grievances, what we call lobbying, that all the any other form of expression or organization had. So long as the church doesn't have access to government power, that's the limitation on the church. You can't use government power to impose your views on people, but you can be a moral goad to the conscience of the country, and I think that's one of the reasons that the framers kept government out of religion, to allow it to flourish here, and to be able to speak freely without government manipulation and control.
So when your organization speaks freely without government manipulation or control, what good does it do? Or what does it do? What effect? Does it have any effect at all?
Oh, I think it has an enormous effect. If you listen to debates on the war in Iraq in 1990, the Gulf War, the debates over Bosnia and Kosovo and whether we ought to intervene, it was filled with just war talk, with people citing on the floor of the Senate and the House citing religious authorities as to when is just cause to intervene to save innocent people. And I think, you know, on the civil rights movement, on the environmental movement now, that I think is one of the most intuitively religious issues of our time, the notion that we're obligated to protect God's creation, I think the moral voice of the religious community has had a profound impact on the history of America, and continues to have a profound impact, but no more or less than anyone else. It's the strength of its reasoning that is makes it effective. It is not that religion ever should have the ability to use the coercive power of government to impose its views on America. It can only persuade people by moral suasion that its view is right, and then, like any other democratic decision our representatives make, they vote to enact it or they vote not to enact the views that the church has espoused.
So a little holding up a little candle of rationality in the darkness, essentially.
I think of it more as ethical insight, but yes, I think that's exactly what we do. And of course, religions are not the only source of it. They're one of many rich sources of wisdom and ethical insight in the great debates that shape America.
Now, you are going to be doing some roundtable events. Let's announce the things that you're going to be doing at Temple Beth Shalom tonight at 7:30. You will be giving a sermon tomorrow at 9:30. There is some text study, and the text will be available in advance. 10:30 Shabbat, and lunch after that. And then in the afternoon, you're going to be doing two roundtables: economic justice, testing the morality of our nation, at 1 o'clock, and then at 2:45, U.S. foreign policy in the age of terrorism. What is the nature of these roundtables? Everybody gets to sit around and talk and debate and think these issues out loud. Are you leading it more as a lecture?
The roundtable, each one of those sessions will start with a presentation that I'll do a little shorter than I would normally do. And the roundtables have two goals. The first is to give people really a chance to talk about these issues. It's hard to do in a lecture setting. So that's important in and of its own value. But the second is for people from this community to talk about, what does this mean to our community? What does it mean to the synagogue that I belong to, or the church that I belong to? And what is the, how can we apply the values that we've been discussing to the very real challenges that America faces today, that Santa Fe faces today, New Mexico faces today, and the world faces today? So I hope out of this will come ideas for programmatic implementation for the community here that can help stimulate social justice activities across the community.
Well, Rabbi Saperstein, it's wonderful to have you on. I wish we could have had more time today, but we will see you tonight and tomorrow at Temple Beth Shalom. If people have more questions or would like to go, all events are free and open to the public, but they can call the temple at 982-1376. Thanks so much for being with us here on KSFR.
Well, you're welcome. It's a real pleasure to talk with you and your listeners.
We're going to take a little break right now. Robert Knott will be with us in a moment. Stay tuned.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Garcia Street Books, also a supporter of the Santa Fe Poet Laureate program. Here's a poem by Laureate Arthur Z.
The Owl. The path was purple in the dusk. I saw an owl perched on a branch, and when the owl stirred, a fine dust fell from its wings. I was silent then, and felt the owl quaver, and at dawn, waking, the path was green in the May light.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Cedar Mountain Solar Systems, designing and installing solar heating systems in both new and existing homes throughout northern New Mexico. Homeowners interested in learning how solar heating can directly benefit them, the community, and the environment are invited to attend an educational workshop this coming Saturday, March 10th from 2 until 5 o'clock at the Downtown Public Library. More information available by calling Cedar Mountain Solar Systems at 474-5445.
I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is associate editor of the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and he's here with us every Friday speaking of the arts. Welcome, Robert.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good, thanks. I just ran into Steve Buck from the CCA, and he...
I hope you didn't hurt him.
He told me to be nice this morning, so in case you didn't know, in the local section of the New Mexican today... there's a story on the CCA's groundbreaking ceremony at 2 p.m.
That's right. Bill Dupuy did a nice feature on that this morning.
Yeah, they're looking to renovate. They've gotten some money together, and it looks like it's going to be an exciting time. So if you feel like going over to 1050 Old Pecos Trail at 2 p.m. for the groundbreaking, and I believe the governor is planning to be there to give a little keynote speech. What does keynote mean?
A keynote speech is the speech that somebody, usually a respected member of the community or guest, gives at the beginning of a conference or event.
So I would hardly ever be asked to do a keynote.
Well, only you would know that. By the way, I would like to say, somebody after our show last week called and left a very whiny, complainy message on my machine at the station, and they didn't leave their name. So I would like to say, if anybody would like to call and complain, if you don't have the guts to even leave your name, I'm not going to take you seriously.
Uh-oh. That's funny. I want to speak about Backstreet Bistro, their art space, 513 Camino de los Marques off Cordova. They're having an opening reception tonight from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Several artists, including Angela Tilford and Christine Brunette Lecomte, are going to have an exhibition of paintings, pastels, mosaics, pottery, art, refreshments, camaraderie, they claim. 5:30 to 7:30 tonight, the show runs to mid-April, right across the street from us, sort of. And there is some theater happening this weekend, which I would like to stress. Martin Sherman's play Bent, perhaps best described as a love story set in a Nazi concentration camp, opens at 7:30 p.m. tonight at the Santa Fe Performing Arts, also at 1050 Old Pecos Trail in the CCA complex. All shows are at 7:30 p.m., including Sundays. This is a three-weekend run. I have a story on it in today's Pasatiempo, and I am going to see it this weekend. Phone number for tickets, 984-1370. And 7:30 p.m. seems to become more and more a trend for evening theater, because that's what the theater work is now doing. They're opening Howard Barker's Scenes from an Execution, 7:30 tonight. It's a drama about war, art, life in 16th century Venice. I don't know the play. I am going to see it, but I didn't write the previous story. Elizabeth Cook Romero did, but it's in today's Pasatiempo. And you probably know that tonight is V-Day Cabaret and Dance Party at 8 p.m. at Wise Fool Studio on Agua Fria Street. Unit D, as in dance. They're sliding scale admission. It's a celebration of women's empowerment with spoken word, dance, music, circus, and Warehouse 21 youth involved. 8 p.m., phone number 992-2588.
Hey, I would like to interject right now that KSFR is having our fundraiser coming up, and this is the time of year where we... ask people to donate and contribute and keep the station going. And to that end, we need volunteers to answer the phones and to hang around the station. I'm not looking at you. I'm telling our vast audience that if they would like to volunteer, they can call Angela, the volunteer coordinator, at the phone number 603-8400, 603-8400. The benefits of this include not only camaraderie and the personal benefit of doing something good for the station, but also superb food.
Oh, boy. It's nice to eat, especially when you're hungry.
That's what I'm thinking.
Thursday evening, Glengarry Glen Ross opens the Playhouse with a preview show at 8 p.m. The preview shows are cheaper than the usual shows, so if you want to save a little money, head over to the Santa Fe Playhouse, 8 p.m. Thursday. That's on DeVargas Street. It's David Mamet's play. If you saw the movie or the play, I've seen both. You know what
that's
I'm talking about.
That's an amazing movie.
It is. I'm going to talk more about this next weekend when it officially opens. And by the way, the Playhouse is seeking proposals for people that want to direct next season. If you want to direct a show at the Playhouse, you have to the end of this month to get a proposition in. Call them at 988-4262 or online check out www.santafeplayhouse.org. And along the line of auditioning, this might be good for you, Mary Charlotte. The Albuquerque Little Theater is holding auditions later in March for Guys and Dolls. You and I would be good in that, wouldn't we?
Yeah, yeah, I could play Adelaide.
And who would I play?
Oh, definitely the Marlon Brando character. No, the Frank Sinatra character.
Thank you, you're right. I would be, what's his name? I can't even think. Nathan Detroit. Good old reliable Robert. Yeah, it's Robert Knott. Anyway, that's later in March. I'll tell you more about it later, but I'll give you a phone number if you want to go down there and audition. 505-242-4750. Gotta sing, gotta dance, gotta love musicals. And Warehouse 21 is still alive and well. They're not in their space over on Paseo de Peralta, which is just sitting there waiting to be bulldozed. But Sunday they're having the dance party of the century. Now my question is, the century is only how many years old?
7.
All right, so that's pretty good still to have the dance party of the past 7 years.
I know.
And this is from 4 to 11 on Sunday, the 11th, at Rock and Rollers, which is on Agua Fria Street. And they're going to have Peach Cake. You and I love the names of these bands. Faceless Sweet, Fallen Hope, 1090 Club, Great Glass Elevator, Emergency Room, that sounds like a great band, and Briar Tone. These are the names of the bands playing in the dance party of the century, 4 to 11, 7 hours of dancing. That fits because it's 7 years old, the century. And it fits me because most of the time I act like I'm 7. Ah, I thought I'd beat you to the punch there. Call 473-7755. There is absolutely no charge to go to this thing. See Rob DeWalt's Soundwaves column in today's Pasa Tiempo for the dance party of the century.
Beyond the Call is a film that is backed by popular demand at the Santa Fe Film Center, the former Cinema Cafe, right over on St. Michael's Drive. And it screens today and tomorrow at 5:30 and then on Monday at 7:45 in the evening. And it's billed as fusing Mother Teresa and Indiana Jones. It's a great documentary.
People are always using those analogies.
I know.
Writers use them too. It's always like, you know, guess who's coming to dinner?
Casablanca meets Basic Instinct.
Yeah, how do you fit those two? That's interesting. I love Casablanca. I saw that on TV the other night.
And my favorite movie of the Santa Fe Film Festival of last December is called Expiration Date, and that's coming back too. That's today and tomorrow at 7:45. Sunday at 1 in the afternoon, and then Wednesday of next week at 7:45, and I'm actually going to be talking to the director on Tuesday morning.
That's a mildly amusing comedy.
It's more than mildly amusing. It's hilarious and very well done. I think it's a great movie. I've seen it twice.
I also think Wild Hogs is a mildly amusing movie. It's getting some bad reviews. It's not a great picture, but it's a very decent comedy. You know exactly what you're going to get. You go in, you enjoy it. I saw it last Friday with a full house, and people were roaring with laughter. Most of it shot in Madrid, New Mexico, so it's not bad. It won't be a waste of your time. It's not going to stay in your mind like, you know, The Life of Brian or some of the other great comedies. Basic Instinct, that was a hilarious one you mentioned.
Unintentionally.
There's some classical music this weekend, and one of these days I'm going to go to one of these things. Santa Fe Women's Ensemble is offering their spring offering 2007. They're still doing spring offerings because it's spring and they're offering. So there's music with Brahms, Linda Rice Beck, and others, 7 p.m. tonight at the Loreto Chapel, 207 Old Santa Fe Trail. And the Vienna Choir Boys are performing at 8 p.m. Tuesday at the Lenzig. Music by Mozart, Bartok, and other people. So they're boys, they're from Vienna, they're a choir. Put it together, 8 o'clock Tuesday. The Lenzig, 988-1234. Meanwhile, tonight at 7 at the Rail Yard Performance Space, 1611 Paseo de Peralta, by the railroad tracks, Travis Jarrell Benefit Concert. And a number of people are getting together to give this concert to assist this local dancer with her medical costs. I don't know the specifics. I do know the phone number, 690-4380. Admission will be charged. Proceeds benefit the medical costs. I know Round Mountain will be there, and the Goddess of Arno. Do you know who the Goddess of Arno is? That's some goddess. I mean, I'd like to meet that person. That means they're on the ground. Gods are usually like up in the heavens.
Not necessarily.
Really? I had a dream last night. I was running in a marathon, and I was out of shape, and I didn't want to do it.
You know, Robert, that's very interesting. Tell us more about what you're feeling anxious about.
Well, I ran in a marathon, the Athens Marathon in 1984 when I was in shape. That's one thing to do 26 miles when you're 24 years old, but when you're 47, it's not so easy. I don't know how I got signed up for this thing.
The Marion Center for Photographic Arts at the College of Santa Fe presents Taken with Time, a camera obscura project at the Atrium Gallery, opening tonight with a public reception from 5 to 7 in the evening. And that's well, three internationally recognized artists brought together to celebrate with their innovative approaches to reviving the magical camera obscura, which is basically a box with a hole in it that lets light go through. It's the oldest kind of camera, and so it's basically taking obsolete technology and using it in new ways.
Isn't that how you like look at an eclipse? Remember when you were a kid?
Yeah, kind of. Pinhole camera.
Right. That always scared me. Do you think it's true if you look, you'll go blind?
If you stare at the sun for several minutes, yes, you will go blind. Don't try this.
During an eclipse or in general?
In general. Even more so when it's not an eclipse.
Is it also true if you sneeze with your eyes open, your eyeballs will pop out?
You know, Robert, I think we really need to go back to what we're doing here.
I think we really
need some focus.
Okay, on Saturday, Lynn Klein is going to talk about and sign copies of her book, Literary Pilgrims.
Yeah, we had her on the air yesterday.
Why didn't you tell me? I would have tuned in.
You're supposed to tune in anyway.
I can't tune in every morning. Sometimes I have to wake up.
Well?
It's the Santa Fe and Taos Writers Colonies, 1917 to 1950. This is at Collected Works, which is on 208B, as in books, West San Francisco Street, pretty much across the street from the Lenzic, next to Tia Sophia's. 988-4226, totally free to go there. It's from 5, I think it's like 5 to 8 Saturday. Does that sound right? So, Literary Pilgrims, does that mean they were like writing as they were moving? Because Pilgrims is, okay. Tonight at 7:30.
It means people who came from elsewhere to escape from something into a better place.
So they came to Santa Fe and Taos.
Correct.
That's still doing that, aren't they?
Yeah, people are still doing it.
The Acoustic Ecology Lecture Series tonight at 7:30 presents Here We Are. And the thing is, here is spelled H-E-A-R. So it's here, but it sounds alike. It's an acronym, I think, when two things sound alike.
Homonym.
A homonym?
Yeah.
Okay. What's a synonym?
It's when two words mean... It's two words meaning the same thing.
All right. Well, that's what I meant. Here We Are, listening to in Santa Fe in northern New Mexico. It's a roundtable talk tonight at 7:30 with local and visiting music professionals at the O'Shaughnessy Performance Center, College of Santa Fe campus on St. Mike's Drive, no charge. And also at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, Yosef Lapid, academic head of New Mexico State University's Department of Government, will speak on peace in the Middle East, if so, how? That could be a really interesting lecture. It's 11:30 at the Hilton, 100 Sandoval Street, downtown Santa Fe. I'm not sure what room. Here's the phone number, 982-4931. You do have to pay to get in.
Hey, how about Barbara Ehrenreich speaking this Sunday at 7 o'clock at the Lenzic?
On Nickel and Dimed.
Nickel and Dimed. On not Getting By in America.
You're not kidding. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the lecture is called We'll Work for Change.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. She's amazing. She's my intellectual mentor. I love Barbara Ehrenreich.
Have you met her?
No.
I see.
I hope to.
Love somebody you never met. When is that?
On Sunday at 7 o'clock at the Lenzic.
And Craig Smith did a really interesting Q&A with her in today's Pasta Tiempo. So if you're interested in it, go pick it up. On Sunday, Elizabeth Bagwell will speak on Archaeology on the Edge, Adventures on the Casas Grandes Western Border. That's 2 o'clock at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture up on Museum Hill, 710 Camino Lejo, by museum admission. And I'm pretty sure Sunday's New Mexico residents free in the museums, right? In the state museums here? So you can go see that lecture for free, 2 o'clock. Meanwhile, on Monday, Scott E. Page, who's a University of Michigan professor, he's going to talk about, quote, the difference, colon, how the power of diversity creates better groups, firms, schools, and societies. That also sounds interesting. 7:30 p.m. Monday, James A. Little Theater, New Mexico School for the Deaf, 1060 Cerritos Road. This is a Santa Fe Institute Public Lecture Series event. I should go to more of these rather than playing pool at the Catamount, huh?
Your call.
Huh. I'll have to figure that out when I'm playing pool Monday night. Meanwhile, on Wednesday, it's the Good Old Reliable Lannan Series with Charles Simic and David Lehman. Poets, 7 p.m., Lenzic, 988-1234. And I have to mention that Thursday, Robin Williams, the local author, is going to talk about her work at 7 p.m. out in El Dorado at the Vista Grande Library. And she wrote Sweet Swan of Avon did, A Woman Write Shakespeare. She believes that Shakespeare was a woman, but that Shakespeare didn't really... Well, Shakespeare was a man, but he didn't write... A woman wrote, and somehow it got attributed to Shakespeare. It was sort of this, you know, mason and landowner and part-time actor. It's a fascinating possibility, but it took place like 500 years ago, around the time of all that biblical stuff, so I don't really know too much about it. I'm going to move on to the next subject.
All that biblical stuff?
Yeah, Shakespeare and all that stuff. Anyway, there's Russian folk art. You ought to be rushing up to see it from 1 to 4 p.m. Today, I hope, because I didn't write it down, at the Museum of International Folk Art, which makes sense because it's a folk art museum and they're having Russian folk art. That's at 706 Camino Lejo. It's by museum admission, and you can learn about embroidery, quilting, carving, and doll making. Doll making, that goes back to guys and dolls. I've made a few dolls in my time. Anyway, 476-1200 by museum admission, 1 to 4 p.m. I think it's today, I apologize. Embroidery, that's pretty good. I thought this is what you did to dead people in a mortician. A morgue, doesn't he?
It's embalming.
Huh. On Saturday, the 13th annual Acequia Madre Art Auction is going to take place. This is at 5:30 p.m. at the El Dorado Hotel. Appetizers, music by Mariachi Buenaventura. You've got to pay to get in. There's silent auctions. There's live auctions. Proceeds benefit art, language, and physical education programs over at Acequia Madre Elementary School. You want a phone number? Here it comes. 316-7636.
Hey, there's a discussion on Thursday of next week on the future of Acequia agriculture featuring UNM Professor Jose Rivera. And that's on Thursday, March 15th in the community room of Agua Fria Fire and Rescue Station. If you want more information, you can call 820-1696.
What time is it?
8:53.
Oh, boy. There's music, pop music. Jerry Carthy at the Irish, doing Irish at Cafe Dominic at 6, no cover. That's tonight. Eric Hysaw doing Americana at the Cowgirl at 9 tonight, a very small cover. We can't say prices on the community radio station. That 70s band's playing at 9 p.m. at El Paseo, small cover. Antonio Mendoza is doing Spanish music at Los Mayas at 6 p.m., no cover. Charles Tishner on piano at Vanessi's tonight, 7:30, no cover. And then there is some Saturday night music, including...
Now, wait a minute.
Yeah?
Tonight at Salsa Sison, La Guira, voted the best salsa band in El Paso, they're going to be here tonight. And that is at Salsa Sison, which is at 2400 Cerrillos Road in the same parking lot as Smith's Supermarket.
Okay, I didn't mean to eradicate them. I just don't always write down every single group like you.
Yeah, well, that's a big event. Live salsa music by a great band.
That's, yeah, I know.
In Santa Fe.
Terrific. It's clearly, that's the keynote event, and I don't fit in with keynotes too often. Saturday nights, John Trenton Costa and friends are at Bumblebee's Baja Grill at 6, no cover. Manzanares, that's a hot band, doing Latin grooves at 8:30 p.m. Saturday at the El Dorado, no cover. The Memphis P-Tails are going to do blues at El Farol Saturday night, and there is a small cover, 9:30. And Ronald Roybal is going to do Native American flute and Spanish guitar at 7 p.m. at the Hotel Santa Fe, no cover. I like this last one. DJ Turley, unless I got it wrong and it's Turtle, offers country and western dancing with the Kick Up Some Dust dance party at 8 p.m. Saturday at the Silver Starlight Lounge, Rainbow Vision Rodeo Road, cover charge. Have you been to Rainbow Vision?
No, I haven't. We had them on the air.
What about
the It sounds like a great place.
The Silver Starlight Lounge. What do you know about it?
Nothing.
I see. Okay. And Monday night's Cowgirl Karaoke at the Cowgirl. Do you ever go there for that?
I can't say I have.
Do you think you have to be a girl to do it?
Well, let's see. Let's analyze that very carefully. What is the name of the event?
Cowgirl Karaoke.
Okay.
So you'd probably have to be feminine. Womanly, not a guy, definitely not masculine.
So whether you could do it or not remains an open question. What else is happening?
There's an all-ages swing dance on Monday night at the Oddfellows Hall at 7:30 p.m. at Cerrillos Road. Very small fee to get in. Non-marking shoes. What's that mean? Like no tennis things that leave marks on the floor?
Yeah, shoes that have black rubber soles that leave black rubber skid marks on the floor. You don't want to do that.
So based on your experience dancing, teaching dance, going to dance, what other shoes leave marks on the floor?
I would say soccer cleats leave marks on the floor.
What about cowboy boots that inadvertently you polished on the bottom?
That would be a candidate for mark leaving.
Uh-huh. Hey, if you feel like going to Los Alamos, Annie Get Your Gun is playing this weekend. It's a Irving Berlin show about Annie, who gets her gun. It's presented by the Los Alamos Light Opera at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday at the Duane Smith Auditorium, which is in the Los Alamos High School, which is on Diamond Drive in Los Alamos. Phone number 455-7467. That show gets on my nerves.
Well, then don't go see it.
Well, it's not this production. I just, you know, it's always that same thing. Can't get a man with a gun. You get a man a lot of other ways. A gun is the way out sometimes. Also, if you're going up there, there's an interesting art show called Alive with Color, The Art of Colored Pencils. Do you remember when we were little and, like, Christmas time you would get those, what do you call those color things that you do by number?
It's called paint by number.
But with pencils.
Ah.
Colored pencils by number?
Something like that.
Did you ever do those?
No.
You did paint by number?
I had a paint by number set. I found it a little boring, to tell you the honest truth.
Well, it depends on if you painted by numbers or by other figures. Okay, anyway, The Art of Colored Pencils, that's tonight at the Art Center at Fuller Lodge, also in Los Alamos. That's at 2132 Central Avenue. The phone number is 505-662-9331. The show runs through mid-April, so if you missed the reception tonight of The Art of Colored Pencils, you can go later. And finally, I was sent an email for the Sea Gallery opening, and I was all planning to talk about it, but it opens next week. So I'll try to talk about it next week. But Sea Gallery is having a glass show opening next Friday night, 708 Canyon Road, 5 to 7 p.m., and I will try my best to recollect this next Friday. What time is it?
8:57. It's just about time to go. It's almost 8:58. No, parting is very sweet. It's such sweet sorrow.
Oh, really?
But, you know, when it's time to go, it's time to go.
I part my hair every day. I never have any sweet sorrow of it.
That's because you've got a full head of hair, Robert.
Okay, I'll see you around.
Robert Knott is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo Friday Art Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. He's here with us every Friday speaking of the arts, and it's always a delight to have you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are on the web at ksfr.org. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. Thanks to Dr. Hubris for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, Jazz a la Carta. Once again, if you would like to become a KSFR volunteer during our fundraiser at the end of March, beginning of April, please call Angela at 603-8400. 603-8400. She is standing by to take your call or phone message if she is away from the phone for a moment, 603-8400. We are looking forward to that time of year, as we always do, because it's a time to connect with the community. But meanwhile, we are hoping that you have a wonderful weekend. Be happy, be peaceful, be safe, and wear your seatbelt. Hasta la vista. Bye, Robert.
Adios.
Adios.
No animals were hurt in the making of this program.